VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here sunny and bright and live and alive, as always, on a Saturday morning. And we'll be bringing you all kinds of fun things about the market and about taxes and about this and about that. There's just so much going on right now. It's kind of a shame we only have an hour, but I guess that means next week will be just as much fun as this week, huh?
I can't imagine it would be any different.
Well, for all you regulars, thanks for coming back. You keep us in business, so to speak. And if you're new to the show, either accidentally or on purpose, then stick around for the hour if you can. You may just learn something. And for those of you who do not necessarily enjoy listening to pre-canned radio shows about financial things, we will talk about what we want to talk about unless you want us to talk about what you want to talk about. How do you do that?
That was a really confusing way of saying call the show.
Well, if it were simple to say everything, everybody would know everything.
Okay.
See? Alan's chuckling. Yes, anyway, just pick up the phone. Call 904-222-8255. That's a 904-222-TALK. And we will immediately, I stress that word, immediately, change to the topic that you would rather talk about. So if you want to be an editorial content developer on this show, it's the easiest thing in the world. But we'll try not to bore you, even if we don't talk about things that you necessarily thought we should talk about. Am I done now?
I hope so.
You raise them, you feed them, you water them. What do you get? All right. Well, as usual, we'll let Adam tell you about the market. I'll summarize my thoughts on the market, as I always do right up front. Last week, I said it was a good week that didn't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
This week wasn't a particularly good week, but it felt better than it actually turned out.
Yeah, it was just boring. It was. And I say that, and we had a 400-point drop in the middle of the week. So
isn't that funny?
That's really an unusual thing to take away from that. But it really was a boring week. There wasn't much movement.
That plays right into our trivia question, which we'll give out right after the first break. The trivia question is about that same volatility that you're talking about.
Okay. If you want to know what a flat week looks like, look at the S&P 500 this week. The index ended up within 1 point of where it started the week. In fact, it was 0.2 points, so 0.2 points. Not percentage points, but actual points, which amounted to a 0% change for the week. So when I say boring, you don't have to look much further than that to see why I'm saying that. It just, there wasn't a lot of movement. The NASDAQ ended up 26 points away from where it started, and the Dow, despite falling over 400 points in one day, as I mentioned earlier, ended it within 150 points, or 0.6% away from where it started the week. So all three indexes were down, but down slightly. So it really wasn't a bad week. It wasn't a great week. It was just a boring week.
It's like going to your next-door neighbor's house, but going around the block to get there.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't flat, however, from a lack of good news. It seems like everywhere you turn this week, there was good news. Korea disarming, companies beating earnings targets, positive economic data. It really, just everywhere you look, it was positive, and the market just yawned and shrugged it all off and didn't do much. The sector that saw the largest gains this week was utilities. It was up 2.8%. The sector is still down on the year by more than 1%, so it has been kind of a laggard this year, but made up a little bit.
But how strange is it when the big news of the week, the takeaway that people were coming off the market with, was about interest rates rising, which should be very negative for utilities.
Yeah.
And yet what was
already priced in, I guess. I don't know.
Well, and I think what you said about being down for the year, people are starting to look for a bargain now because a lot of people are thinking a lot of things have topped out.
Yeah.
I believe they're wrong.
I believe that as well, but we'll get to that in a bit. Healthcare had a nice week. It was up over 1.5%. brought the sector back into the positive for the year. Industrials were down more than 3%, and materials were down more than 2% this week, and both are down for the year. The worst performing sector has been consumer staples this year. It's down more than 10%. Ouch. The best sector has been consumer discretionary, up 5.8%. A really big divergence between the two consumer sectors, which is odd.
Yep. Well, everybody thinks that they've got excess money.
So they're not going to buy consumer staples anymore? I don't understand the argument there.
I don't understand it either. But one thing about that, the consumer variables, as the word, the discretionary, they're putting them on their credit card.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about credit card debt today, too, and have an interesting way of looking at it that I haven't ever addressed before. But we'll get to that. The commodities index added 6 basis points this week, while silver, gold, and oil all dropped.
That makes no sense either.
I know. And silver was down quite 3.5%.
Well, the dollar was up sharply.
Yeah.
So all commodities should have fallen. But instead of that, it was only metals that fell.
Yeah, natural gas actually rose, kind of bucking the trend.
Yeah, everything was different this week.
Yeah, it's still down over 3% this year, but that helped a little bit to get it back on track. Mm-hmm. The return on the 10-year Treasury hit 3% this week, and that was the big news that caused the market to fall in midweek, I think.
The Chicken Little came out in force and said the sky was definitely falling.
Right. And the long Treasury bond actually gained 36 basis points, while the total bond market ETF was flat. Long Treasuries are still down more than 5.5% on the year, despite the rise this week. So not been a great investment if you're long bonds this year.
No.
Another positive note from this week is that the public is now bearish on the stock market, more bearish than bullish on the stock market for the first time since the election.
Yeah, we were doing a little high-fiving on that one a bit ago.
Why is that a positive thing? Because when the public is picking a direction for the market, they are almost always wrong. This particular indicator is a pretty good contrarian indicator. So whenever you see sentiment go to bearish, it's time to buy. So I'm not going to say that right now is it, but it's a pretty good indicator that it could be.
I don't think you can hurt yourself very badly by getting in.
Right. So this is great. More than 700 companies have now reported first quarter earnings, and so far things look pretty amazing. Remember that going into the season, forecasts were raised significantly because of the tax law, which they should have been. Mm-hmm. Last week, the earnings beat rate stood at 80%, which was the highest we had ever seen.
And what did we say?
It was going to come down. Yep. It was unsustainable. But the good news is that it only dropped to 73% on a lot more data, and 73% is still a fantastic number. The other good news is that last week we saw the revenue beat rate at 64%, which was a little lower than what we'd like to see. This week it jumped up to 71% on more data. So it usually doesn't move up. That's kind of unprecedented.
If you can get that one in a 70 or above range, you're doing something.
So, and the third bit of good news out of all that is that forward guidance is looking as strong as I have ever seen it, despite the fact that I saw two experts this week on Bloomberg saying that forward guidance was largely negative, and that's why the market wasn't going up.
That
wait, what
is a crock?
Yeah, it wasn't. They were either lying, misinformed, or I'm not sure, but it is really looking strong.
An expert is a guy from out of town who, if you hand him your watch, will then tell you what time it is. That's I like what I think of those guys.
And I've got some stuff about economic data. We'll have to get to it after the break, though.
Yeah, we were throwing a little mention of jobs also. What's going on in the job market, people? If you have ever thought about getting into the job market, or better yet, if you're graduating from college in the next few days, oh my gosh, did you time that?
Yeah, no kidding.
Things could not be better out there for the people that are in the job market. All right, we got a lot more to do on the market wrap and some other topics, which we will do right after a short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we will return to wrap up the market wrap after I give out the trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. Last week I mentioned that there's an old market saying that says, if you miss the best 7 days in any market year, you will not make any money for that entire year. I've been in this business now for about 17 years. I have tested it most every time, and I have never seen it fail. So I tested it today for last year, and it failed. So what percentage of last year's overall gain was represented by the best 7 days in the market this year? And the answer is, of course, under 100%, because that's how the question was set up.
All right. So narrows it down.
And good morning, Captain Dave.
Good morning from Jamaica. How are you?
Oh, you just got to rub it in, don't you? Although, I have to say, it's beautiful here.
It's starting to be a rainy season.
Oh, is it? Okay. Well, if you need some sunshine, let me know and I'll send some down because we got lots of it.
No. We don't want it. When it's just damp, you don't need sunshine. You like it to be a little
overcast. Get steam rising anyway, from everything.
Yeah. Our favorite stock is doing whoop-de-doos.
Yeah, but it dropped a little bit.
Yeah, it tries and tries and tries.
I mean whoop-de-doos, up, down.
Oh, down. In fact, I got a little speech I'm going to give about that.
The services all call it a hold. So there must be something going on. I don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? This market is unexplainable right at the moment.
Stock was up 22% on Friday.
At all. Yeah, but that thing, that's still craps money.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
That is. That's a game of craps.
Yeah.
You know what? You liable to hit, you might be liable to throw a seven.
Yeah.
So give it a try.
I suppose you can do that in Jamaica, huh?
Yeah, all right. Well, I told you last week, a week before I came here, so I'd call you from Jamaica, so I did.
Well, you know, you got the prize so far today for the longest distance phone call.
Yep. I did get a text from Cincinnati, which is probably further.
We'll have to check that out. Listener, so. Good to talk to you. Glad you make it safe.
We're 613 nautical miles from you.
Okay, we'll check that out.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, take care. Glad you made it safe.
See, we truly are broadcast worldwide.
We are. Love that internet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, some additional thoughts on the market. One of them that I thought was interesting was the lack of volatility, and that's why I developed the trivia question for today. But the other thing I was thinking about this week is what we refer to on the show as recency bias, and it means that we tend to think that what's been going on recently is going to continue. Well, we kind of disconnected from recency bias in February, because recency bias meant up. But it happens during these earnings seasons a lot. People tend to look at quarter to quarter being the most critical thing for the market. And I think it's terribly short-sighted to always look no further ahead than the end of the next quarter. And yet our CEOs are required to do that. And it's no different in D.C., where the people never look beyond the next election. Therefore, they've already announced that there's no more legislation coming for this year because there's an election coming up in 5.5 months. Jeez, people. Oh, that's just me, maybe. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, what would the Van Wee Financial Hour be without the Chuckster calling in?
Boring. Just monotonous. Same old. What's happening?
Well, you know, we've heard that same stale saying around this time of year, sell in May and go away.
Yep, right.
And you know, a lot of times it's a total fake out. And so I'm just wondering, is this year going to be true or is it going to be a fake out?
Fake out.
You know, it hasn't been true the last few years.
Nope.
I've actually done a piece on that in May. I think every year we've been on and it hasn't held at all.
You know, if you do the go away in May thing and you want to be a little bit more accurate, you'd go away at the end of May, not the beginning of May, because May has historically been a good month. Recent, you know, I suffer from recency bias.
Sure.
So most Mays lately have been pretty good. Most summers lately have been pretty good. It's a fun thing to talk about, but if you really try to time the market on some arbitrary principle like that, I promise you, you're going to get killed. It just doesn't work.
I was reading an article. I think it was on MarketWatch. They were quoting the guy who writes the Stock Trader's Almanac, and he was talking about how we're coming into the worst 4 to 6 months of the year historically.
Yeah,
in the market.
If you average out long periods of time, he's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean you should act on it.
You know, just on another note, I mean, I never thought I'd see in my lifetime what's going on in Korea. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Truly.
I asked that same question.
It actually plays out.
Yep. I asked that same question to some people we were with last night. Did you ever think that in your lifetime you would see this? And we all shake our heads and say, never, ever gave it a thought. It's pretty exciting. Truly.
It is. I hope it really plays out. And, you know, I can't help but think that maybe it's because I'm pretty sure Kim Jong-un was educated in Switzerland, and I think he's completely different than his father and grandfather, and I think he says, wait a minute, this ain't working. You know, we got to get with the 20th century or the 21st century because our people are dying.
Well, he had dual stimulus, one of them being that he believes Trump would do to him what Trump says he'll do to him, but the other one was when they blew up their facility in the mountain, it's going to take a couple $1 billion to replace it, and he just doesn't have it.
And doesn't have a way to get it because he's effectively shut himself off from the world.
Now, when you think about the fear that's been in the market over the last year because of him, well, now if he proves himself to be not so fearful, that's just another great tailwind for the market.
I don't know. I don't think the market was really fearful of him. I mean, the market certainly didn't go down on the news last year.
No, not for lack of trying in the media.
True.
But well, yeah, I'm excited.
If this can be put aside and we don't have to deal with this ever again, and then we can focus in on Iran, which is a much bigger problem.
Yeah, that is unarguable, I believe, because they're crazy and they have money.
Yeah.
Much of it we just gave them.
Oh, that was disgraceful.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it, though?
Wheelbarrows or suitcases full of cash?
Yeah. Not just our currency, but foreign as well. That's amazing.
I mean, to me, that's just criminal, what happened.
Yep. I can't agree with you more. Hey, do you want to take a shot at our trivia? It's just a percentage. What percentage of last year's total gain in the market did the best 7 days represent? It's between 0 and 100, but it's less than 100, and it's more than 0. So I cut out those two.
You know, well, last year there was a lot of days where it was just steady up. It wasn't spectacular gains. I'm going to just say 5%.
Well, you're on the right track, but you're low. But your analysis is precise.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. That's why it didn't work. The rule of thumb did not work last year. That's a good guess, and now we've narrowed our bracket, people. It's between 6 and 99 now.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Have a great Saturday.
Chuck, always
fun.
Thanks
for the call, Chuck.
That was exactly the right way to think.
Yeah, that was spot on, just a little low.
I'm impressed. Anyway, the whole recency bias thing really upsets me every quarterly earnings season when you realize that if a CEO reports one bad quarter and you don't look beyond that to see, well, maybe it was because they're building a new factory because they got capacity coming online or they're in the process of bringing something home or something like that. Nobody cares. You give me the numbers. The stock will go up a little bit if they're good enough, which means you have to not only beat it, but you have to beat it by a lot. And then people think about it during the day and say, oh, but your guidance wasn't good enough. So then by the end of the day, the Caterpillar thing, up $4 on the announcement, down 10 by the end of the day.
That was a little bit different, though. There was a comment made that really killed them. They said this is as good as it's going to get, and that's not what you want to say in a press conference.
The Chinese have a one-year plan, a 5, a 10, a 20, 25, 50, and a 100-year plan to take over the world. The 2050 plan or something like that. I wish we had a longer duration bias. But as Donald Rumsfeld once said, you go to war with the army you've got. And all that means is you can't control the stock market. You analyze and decide what you should do in that market as just a tiny little bit player. And if you can't live with that, go see the annuity man.
Exactly.
Just that simple.
Yep.
Adam, I'm very confident in this market's ability to keep going forward, even though it's getting rocky. In other words, it's going back to normal.
Yeah,
that's all.
Last year was very abnormal. We've said that many times. And January was extremely abnormal. The slope of the line of the stock market
it's
moving
crazy.
Up as quickly as it was, you cannot sustain that. It was doomed to well, what happened was doomed to happen, in my opinion.
All right, a few other thoughts on the market in our minute that we have left in this segment. One of them was the GDP number.
Yeah, it was expected to come in at 2%, and instead it came in at 2.3. So great news. Existing home sales and new home sales both beat estimates, and housing prices came in higher than expected, according to Kay Schiller, and on par with estimates, according to the government report. PMI for both manufacturing and services came in higher than expected, and both levels were solidly in the expansion territory. Consumer confidence was higher than expected, as was Michigan consumer sentiment. And weekly jobless claims came in at 209,000, the lowest I have ever seen.
Yeah, and the actuals, the non-seasonally adjusted number was under 200,000. You got to go back to when I was in college, folks, to get numbers like this. And let me tell you, that was some time ago.
The economic news this week was overwhelmingly positive.
Yep. We'll be right back. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
This segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Busy folks right now. Call Troy at 662-9794. I remind everybody that our trivia question is out there. Instead of all of the gains from last year being attributable to the best 7 days, the lack of volatility made it less than all of the gain. What percentage of the total gain, which is a number higher than 5 and below 99, what percentage was attributable? This is meant simply to point out the lack of volatility and how abnormal last year really was. All right, we wanted to mention one more statistic. We did mention that the GDP was 2.3% for the first quarter, which beat expectations. But, you know, as good as the government is, and they're pretty tolerable at producing pretty fair statistics about a lot of things. But one thing they haven't figured out yet is the GDP. Now, granted, it's big. That means gross domestic production.
Yeah, a lot of moving
parts.
That's
a lot of stuff. That's all the goods and services. Well, just to give you an example, they seem to be the worst at it in January, February, March, quarter one. So what happened in 2015 is very illustrative of that. The original report came in at plus 0.2% for that quarter. It was then revised to minus 0.7%.
Oh, big change.
That was revised again to minus 0.2%. But now with the historical data in, the actual change was plus 3.2%.
Plus 3.2?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, what do we think this number is worth that we just got for quarter one? What we paid for it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And the point here is that even with the 2.3 number, Trump met his 3% forecast, which everybody said, of course, that he can't do because we're stuck now. The new normal is 2 to 2.1. Well, he did. What if this gets revised up a little bit? It means it beat the forecast. My prediction right now, and I hesitate not one little bit to give it to you, is that it will be revised up soon.
Okay.
We'll see. You can hold me to it. Of course, not worth anything, but you can still hold me to it. I'd have to apologize. How's that? Anyway, you got something you want to do before I jump into this?
Yeah, just real quick. Something struck me this week because of taxes being due.
That's where
recently.
I was going to.
Yeah. I was doing another article that I posted on our blog recently. The average credit card debt for a household in the U.S. is over $15,000. And the average interest rate on that debt is almost 15%.
Mm.
Yeah, 14.87%. And so the average monthly interest payment alone on credit card debt per household in the U.S. comes out to about $194. That's just to pay the interest.
Wow.
Yeah, ouch.
That doesn't get you anywhere.
So it got me thinking. I heard this week that the average tax refund was about $2,763 this past year. That's a lot of money.
Yes,
that
it is.
What interest rate are you getting on that when you give it to the government?
That would be a zero followed right by a decimal point and another zero.
So when you're over withholding in January and then you don't get it back until the following April, you have given essentially a 16-month loan to the government at 0% interest rate. And if you are one of those households that has $15,000 in debt, you are also paying 15% to somebody else to maintain that debt. So that is a big, big just fallacy in financial planning.
So go to your employer, ask him for a new W-4.
Right.
Change your withholding by $200 a month or whatever, and apply that directly to your credit card.
Exactly.
Do not pass go, and do save $200.
So I calculated what would happen if you did that and how long it would take you to pay off your $15,000 debt. And it turns out it would be a little bit over 5 years just using the money from your tax refund that you would be getting monthly instead of getting back at the end of the year.
Yeah, you know what happens once it's paid off? That money goes in your pocket for the rest of it.
Exactly. So, yeah, if you are struggling with credit card debt and you're also getting big refunds, something to think about doing is to change your withholding, get that money monthly into your paycheck, and apply it directly to your credit card debt.
Similarly, now that I think about it, withholding rates have changed.
Yes.
Paychecks are bigger.
That's right.
Rather than living up to it, how about taking whatever extra is in your check from every 2 weeks or twice a month or once a month or whenever and slide that right over to your credit card principal payment and start reducing it?
And while you're at it, then cut those credit cards up and never use them again, because that is the worst form of debt that you can have. Just don't do it.
Or as Clark Howard would say, at least stick it in a glass of water in your freezer. By the time it thaws, you probably won't need that purchase
anymore. Rethink your decision, exactly.
I always liked that one. Kind of nice. All right, speaking of taxes, I know it's over, folks. I know. And you don't like to talk about it beforehand, but you have to, but you don't want to talk about it afterwards, but you should. How's that?
Okay.
How long should you keep your tax returns? Well, there's a wonderful question, isn't it? There are different items in there, and this is from the Tax Act people, who are some of the online tax preparation types. They say typically the IRS has 3 years to audit your return, and you have 3 years to claim a credit or a refund. So if you find something that requires a refiling so you can get your money back, then you got up to 3 years to do that. In fact, when I heard a story recently about a lady who had brought some money into the country, but it was her money, she'd inherited it in England, she brought it back, and someone mistakenly told her that it was taxable income because it was brought into the U.S., Well, that would be like saying, I bought a car over there and brought the car into the U.S. Now I got to pay taxes on the entire price of the car. It's just wrong. So the first question I asked was, well, I hope she did this less than 3 years ago. Come to find out, no, it was more than 3 years ago. That money's gone. She paid $10,000 to IRS because she got stupid advice from someone who was totally unqualified to give it. Don't let things like that happen. But if you find something within the past 3 years, you should definitely have your returns available. All right, 6 years now. Well, what if you are caught in an audit within those 3 years and there was something in it that was either negligent or fraudulent? Well, for 6 years, IRS can go back and look at the other ones, only if they find something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would be a pretty good idea then to have 6 years worth, I think. And of course, if you underreport your income by more than 25%, now you have even more time. Don't even think about it until the magic number, 7 years. If you have a bad investment, you can file a claim for a loss from worthless securities. And in either event, you need to have your records for 7 years. Well, okay, now my limit just went up. You should have all your records for 7 years. How about indefinitely? Do you need every little receipt, everything you've ever done indefinitely? No, but certainly keep a hard copy and or a digital copy of your tax returns for that long. You should be able to access them forever. Why? Well, not necessarily because you're going to get caught doing something bad or anything like that, but I've looked back many times to find interesting things to see, for instance, have my spending patterns changed? Am I doing better? Am I doing worse? If you only do it for that reason, do it anyway, but throw away all the junk that's in the shoebox. You don't need that anymore. So IRS will tell you that three is the usual worst case number. I will tell you it's seven, but at least keep the returns for longer than that. And I think you'll wind up being happier. Back in the old days when we had checking accounts, I kept the checks for that long, too. And, of course, nowadays we don't have many checks anymore, and you don't get them anyway because your financial institution copies them. But they keep the record for you. So isn't that nice?
It is nice.
The digital age has some very definite things about it that make your life easier if you know how to use them. So don't get caught shorthanded, and if you do find out that you made a mistake within 3 years, know that there's no penalty for changing something up to 3 years back. No one's going to knock on your door. Don't worry about those things. Maybe after the break I'll read you a little voicemail I got on my phone the other day that tells you a lot about what not to listen to. It's very interesting.
All right.
All right, and when we get back, there are more things. I got a real-life case example of what we call a qualified charitable distribution and how under the new tax law, this could be a real moneymaker for you if you are 70 and a half or if you ever intend to be 70 and a half, and I do.
I hope to someday.
Yeah. Long time from now, probably.
Yeah.
All right, well, don't go anywhere. We will be right back. The trivia question's still open. If nobody gets it, we'll explain it to you. And just all kinds of fun stuff left in the next segment. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And trivia question is still out there. What percentage of last year's gains on the Dow Jones Industrial Average for nearly 5,000 points was attributable to the best 7 days of the year? The number between 6 and 99%. All right, I know loyal listeners will remember a discussion we recently had about UBI. UBI stands for Universal Basic Income. The city, the bankrupt city of Stockton, California, has decided to experiment with a privately funded version of UBI. And quick to be followed, me too, only bigger and better by Oakland, which has its own problems as well. They're basing it partly on an experiment that's been done by Finland for some time now.
2 years.
Okay. Well, guess what? Didn't work.
Nope, it did not. And it paid a random sample of 2,000 unemployed citizens between the ages of 25 and 58. It was a monthly payment of about 560 euros, which is roughly $700.
And recently, Finland shut down the program because it failed.
Yeah, well, they don't. The government, I don't think, the government of Finland hasn't exactly said that, and I doubt they ever will.
Right.
But you have to suspect that if they're shutting it down, the results were not what they had
hoped
for.
If it works, you'll expand it.
Right.
If it doesn't work, you'll shut it down.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? When you want more of something, you subsidize it. This subsidizes unemployment, which indicates to me that the government must have wanted more unemployment.
Somehow I doubt that.
Well,
actually, the goal of the study was to reduce their unemployment by paying people not to work.
Well, I could tell them how.
Yeah. Their unemployment stood at, this says, 9.2% prior to this experiment. And
if you think about it, we do a similar thing here, only we call it the minimum wage. What happens when you raise the minimum wage? People are better off? The little people are better off?
No.
Or not? Yeah. As it turns out, not. Because they lose their jobs.
Yeah, there's less jobs to go around.
You know, if you had a basic working knowledge of economics throughout Congress and throughout elected officials at every level, state and local, a lot of things would be different, i.e. better. But we don't. There's no requirement.
Speaking of stupid government decisions, I have one here.
Great.
Out of our favorite city, Los Angeles, they are broke. They have a $73 million budget shortfall, which is meant to cover the ever-expanding homeless population. And so what did they do? They voted to start using a street coding that will help fight climate change. Guess how much that costs per mile?
50 cents?
$40,000 a mile to coat their streets
to
with
bounce the sun's rays back into
correct.
The atmosphere and not further warm the earth.
Yeah, and the theory is that it will reduce carbon emissions somehow. $40,000 a mile.
I'm thinking
for I think what is basically white paint.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
I'm thinking.
That's
you know, one thing that it has been done and can be done if people really believe in this. I don't subscribe to it personally, but what they've done in a lot of places, they're starting to use white roofs.
Yeah, which...
Why not?
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, it's simple. It's passive. Put it on white. Leave it white. There you go.
Bet you can get one for under $40,000, too.
Bet you can. How about that? All right, what's a QCD? Qualified Charitable Deduction. Everybody knows, or should know, if you listen to this show long enough, you will know, that once you reach 70 and a half, and if you have a traditional IRA or an ERISA-type retirement program, you have to start taking money out of it. That money is taxable because it's traditional, not a Roth. So this thing was started as a temporary program many years ago. I'm not even sure exactly how many. But each year, it proved kind of successful, so it was renewed. Well, finally, in the new tax law, it's now been codified. It is the law of the land and will be unless it's taken away from us. What it means is all or part of a required minimum distribution can be sent directly to a charity. What does that mean? Here's the old way. You take the required minimum distribution, let's say it's $10,000, and you get a $10,000 1099, which goes on your gross income. Then let's say you're a nice charitable person and wants to give $5,000 away to charity, qualified charity. So you write them a check, and that becomes an itemized deduction. Well, with the old standard deductions being as low as they were, most people who were very charitable just merely itemized deductions, and that income flows one way, and then it flows back the other way, so it's not taxed to you. Well, guy came in the other day, and we got talking about this. And this one was very interesting because of the change in the law. This gentleman was in his 80s, had a fairly sizable traditional IRA, about $100,000. The dictated by law required minimum distribution for this year was about $14,000. That $14,000 is 100% taxable to him at his marginal tax rate for the year, which is down a little bit, but that had nothing to do with the QCD. So let's say he makes about $40,000 a year from retirement income sources, and his RMD goes on top of that. Well, he rents, so he has no mortgage, interest, or property taxes that could provide possible deductions for 2018. But in 2017, because of his charitable nature, he did have enough deductions to itemize on his taxes. So he itemized his contribution to his charity, which is about $6,000 a year, and therefore, he didn't pay taxes on it because it came in as income and it was written off as a deduction. Well, funny thing happened in 2018. Being a single guy, his standard deduction of $6,359 a year rose to $12,000. Well, all of a sudden, can't itemize anymore because he can't get up to the $12,000 limit. So let's see what's going to happen. In 2017... he didn't pay taxes on that $6,000 because he did itemize it off of his gross. Net effect was nothing. So in 2018, he's going to get this $14,000 and write a check for $6,000, but he's going to wind up paying taxes on the whole $14,000. Mm-hmm. Now, did his taxes go up? No, they did not. Here's why. Because in that increase in the standard deduction was included that $6,000. Mm-hmm. So he's not paying any more taxes. Okay, what's the deal? Well, how about this? Let's save him some money. Okay? So what we suggested was he contact the custodian of his IRA, and he says to them, I want the first $6,000 of my RMD out of the 14. I want it sent directly to my qualified charity from you. Never goes through me. Okay, they send him a check for $6,000. He satisfied his charitable distribution desire for the year. Now he gets his required minimum, the balance of it, and it's $8,000. So his gross income goes up only by $8, not by $14, and he still doesn't itemize his taxes, but he's not paying taxes on that $6,000 because he gets the same standard deduction in 2018 he would have had he taken the whole thing. Net effect? He saves his marginal rate times $6,000. Mm-hmm. That's probably going to be about 22% of that. And you can't do it any other way because he doesn't have enough deductions to do it. So the QCD has helped him.
This is going to be a very common thing this year. So especially for retirees, if you are someone living on just Social Security and your RMD from your retirement savings or a pension, and you also like to give to charity, really look at doing this because it will save you some money, and there aren't a lot of ways to save anymore. They've all been taken away.
Yeah, and it is true what they have been claiming right along, that less and less people will itemize, and that has proven to be the case. And this is one of the benefits of dealing with an advisor who knows something other than just, oh, that's a stock and that's a bond, and I get a commission out of if you buy that from me, which, of course, we don't. But think about it. This might go even further. What if your gross income, hence your taxable income, happened to go down enough that it puts you in a lower tax bracket? Then you saved even more money.
Yeah, and you could potentially save if you fall into the lowest two tax brackets,
the key.
You don't have to pay capital gains tax.
That's right.
So
get them free.
Yeah, so if you were able to lower your income enough, that could be a huge savings as well.
He could wind up, if the conditions were right, and of course everybody's different and we'd have to look at your situation, he could wind up saving himself a ton of money by doing something he had no idea could be done.
Exactly.
So deal with us, folks, or listen to the show.
Yep.
You know, our job on this show is never to tell you exactly what to do. We try to teach you what can be done, and then if you come and see us, we'll talk about your situation and see what the best thing could be. All right, let's talk about the trivia question.
Hold on. Speaking of upcoming shows, we have a couple of exciting things to announce. Yeah.
It's about equidistant
to
Jamaica.
Right. Well, that was the person that texted me. He's listening to the show right now, and he is a friend of mine who has gotten into venture capital, and he has been raising money for different investments prior to them being publicly traded. So really interesting stuff. And if you want to know about venture capital, listen in 2 weeks as he's going to be down here on the show. So that'll be a lot of fun. And next week we have Dr. Ellen Wald calling in, who is a absolute expert on the Middle East and the energy/oil market over there. So I'm really looking forward to both of those visitors.
Last year's gains in the top 7 days were 37% of the total instead of 100% of the total as usual. There was so little volatility, and our caller got this idea right off the top. There was so little volatility. The biggest gain last year in the Dow was only a little above 300 points, and everything else was under 300 points. You usually have some really big ones in there. Didn't happen last year, so it's just like that go away in May and come back in November thing. It's just a rule of thumb. Doesn't mean that much. See you next week. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.